Here we go.
I don't really care about the facts and details.
Yo! Come on!
Close,
have an update. Close, Gate 21521, right away. One is Sergeant Simmons at 220. Right away, please. 241 A5 2492. They're supposed to be down
the
kitchen for assignment.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Think Big, Think Loud with. I'm Livingston.
And I'm Selby.
We are here again for episode number 2. We have a guest on today. Our guest is a ex-correctional officer at a prison. He was a corrections officer for 10 years. And our guest just so happens to be also our co-host. Lynn was a corrections officer for 10 years. Why don't you let them know where that was at, Lynn?
Well, that was here in Arizona. It was Arizona State Prison Complex in Winslow, Arizona. It was a, it is a minimum to max prison.
So minimum multiple different kinds of prisoners.
Custodies, well. Yes. You have minimum custody up to maximum custody. The minimum custody yard housed probably 1,000 inmates.
Wow.
Yeah. And then your medium yard, your medium custody inmates, that was limited to 400. And then you had your high security, which was the yard that I worked on the most. And that was 400 inmates. And then our maximum capacity for max inmates, you know, maximum custody was probably around 50 inmates. And those were the guys that went to the hole.
Yeah, that was that's a lot of dangerous people.
It is. And at the time that I was there, we had there's always a lack of correctional officers at your facilities because, you know, the pay just isn't that great. The benefits were awesome, but you had to manage, you know, more inmates than you were supposed to.
Yeah. The risk involved was not worth what it was paying, I'm sure.
No. But it was a good job. I mean, it, you know, the benefits, that's the reason you worked there was for the benefits, but, and the pay was decent, but it wasn't what you should get paid for putting your life on the line every day.
No. Well, police officers don't get paid what they should be getting paid.
No, they don't.
So,
you know, and I talked to a lot of police officers, DPS, you know, state troopers, and they're like, I don't even know how you do that job just because, you know, you're with convicted felons every day.
Yeah, you're dealing with the butt end of life, basically. I can see why someone really wouldn't want to do it for any longer than you did it for. You did it for 10 years. I did.
And there's guys, there's people that do it for 25, 30 years.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you almost become a different person.
You do. It changes you. You start looking at people differently. You know, just regular everyday people on the street. You look at them and you stereotype them just by their look.
Yeah.
You know, and you start looking at people and you see tattoos on them. You start recognizing tattoos and you can recognize prison tattoos over professionally shop tattoos, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, you just steer clear of those people, you know, on the street and, you know, you just don't involve yourself with it. But no, it just makes you a really bad person.
Yeah. It's,
you know, and it's hard to break away from that once you're out of it.
And you've been away from it for what, 10 years at least now?
Oh no, I've been out of it since 2000 and oof. Well, I had my back surgery in 2003. So yeah, about 2003 is when I got out of it.
So 20 years, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's, you're obviously not some, you're a little bit of a hard ass, but you're not a hard ass like you would have been had you stayed.
Right. So when I first started in corrections, I was passive aggressive.
Yes.
When I got done with my training in the academy, I was assertive aggressive.
Yeah.
So yeah, total 180.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, to take somebody that was kind of in a shell, and then after the training you just break out into this totally different person that you don't even know who you are anymore.
Yeah, because I mean, I noticed some of the changes when we spent the weekend with, you know, together last weekend. I didn't say anything because obviously we both have changed in 35 years.
Sure.
But I did notice a harder edge to you than I knew in high school.
Right.
And I mean, that's going to come.
But I'm still looking for that person. You know, I'm still trying to get back to that person.
Back to where you were in high school?
Back to where I was before I started corrections.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You were a rather cordial, nice, easy to get along with. And you're still that way. But
in a different tone.
Yes. Yes. The tone is different. It's hard to describe.
It's all about the tone.
It's more than just the tone, though. It's hard to pinpoint what it is, but there is something about you that is definitely different,
right?
Than it was, and I don't know if it comes from what you saw or witnessed as a corrections officer or what, but there is a definite difference in who you are.
You know, I'd go to work, and you know, I had to go through a Sally port. You know, a secured Sally port.
Yeah.
And the doors that you go through, they're, you know, like 300 or 400 pound doors on rollers that slide back and forth. And there were times when you would walk up and go into the Sally port, and the minute you walked out onto the yard side of the prison, it was almost like you could, man, the tension, you could feel the tension. You could cut it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was so thick. I mean, you can't see it, but you can feel it. And one day I went to work and you could feel the tension. And I'm like, well, you know, let's do this and, you know, just go home safe, you know, at the end of the day. And so I go and I get we go to briefing and find out what's going on from the shift previous and what kind of inmates are causing issues and, you know, you know, a lot of times when there's a lot of tension on the yard, the inmates, even in the summertime, they'll put clothes on, they'll put jackets on. And it's like,
protect themselves from being,
it is, or so whatever. They're lining themselves with like thick pieces of paper, like almost like armor. And, you know, going to chow and, you know, going to do whatever they're supposed to do during the day. And I was up in cell block 3, and I was, we had A team officers and B team officers. A team officers would respond to an incident going on the yard, whether it be an inmate refusing to cuff up and come out of his cell, down to an inmate causing issues in the gym, you know, and you'd be one of the first officers to respond to the situation. And one day, you know, I go to work, I was in cell block 3, dealing with my inmates and releasing inmates for chow for lunch. And we'd release, you know, out of the cell block, we'd release 100 inmates at a time.
Wow.
And you're a single officer on the floor dealing with 100 inmates and coordinating them to get out the door and go to chow, you know, busting their balls if they're not shaved. You know, they had to be clean shaven every day. They couldn't go to chow unless they had shaved. They had to have their IDs in the upper.
Well, I get that. It's a way of teaching people self-respect.
Mm.
And I totally understand it. I didn't get that coming up in school, why that was so important to do all that, but it has to do with a person having self-respect.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know,
and personal hygiene is part of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I get that 100%.
So I release my inmates to chow and they go down to the chow hall, and we're probably a good 150 yards to cell block to the cell, to the chow hall.
Yeah.
And I'm standing out, and it's we call it the H area because the cell blocks look like H's.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have 100 inmates on each side. And I'm standing out in the H area, watching the yard, making sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing, make sure there's nothing going on or people passing stuff that shouldn't be passed, or, you know, they could be passing weapons, drugs, whatever, you don't know. And all of a sudden on my radio, I get this, I need an A-team response to the chow hall. I have multiple inmates fighting.
Oh my goodness.
I know. So I, you know,
where's my machine gun?
and when you get that 18 response, you just go. You don't tell anybody you're going anywhere. You just respond.
Yeah.
And I get down to the front door of the chow hall and I step inside, and there's a couple of officers that were in there. And so, you know, I get those guys out of the chow hall, and these inmates were just going nuts. And I locked the front door because, you know, we're trained to isolate the situation.
Yeah, and protect, you know, your officers. So, yeah,
that's policy. You know, you got to protect your officers. You got to protect other inmates. You have to protect any civilian staff that are working. And the kitchens are run by canteen. And so they're civilian staff. And so I locked the inmates in the chow hall. Well, this goes on for a while. You know, these guys aren't backing down. They're locked. They're not going anywhere. They're locked in the chow hall. And then we start getting calls that they're busting through into the kitchen.
Well, yeah.
They're from the chow hall into the kitchen, right.
It's an opportunity to steal, you know. You what you can get,
Right. Well, they're just out for destruction at this moment.
Yeah.
And so we hear that they're breaking into the chow hall. So me and a few other officers went around to the north yard and gained access to the north chow hall and went into the kitchen through the north side.
Yeah.
And we get in there and we're getting the civilian staff out through the north side, you know, because they're hiding in the office where, you know, where it's secure, but they couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
So we get them out, and as we're getting them out, I've got inmates throwing pots and pans at my head, trying to take me out and the other officers out. And we finally get the civilian staff out, and then we lock the whole chow hall down, north side, south side. So they have run of the kitchen and the north side. Well, before you know it, the tactical support unit comes in, and these guys are like the SWAT team.
Yeah, the most dangerous SWAT team you would ever meet in your entire life.
and I had the privilege of actually being on the tactical support unit, you know, later on in my career. And so these guys come in with 37 millimeter gas guns. And sting ball grenades and flash grenades and percussion grenades.
Oh my God.
And they're shooting these things, and the chow hall is filled with pepper spray. It's just filled. Well, finally, probably at about, you know, and it was a long day, I went in at my shift started at 2 o'clock, and it's already about 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
So they would not come out of the chow hall. No matter what we did, they wouldn't come out. And we weren't going to breach it because we didn't want any officers to get hurt.
Yeah.
So we just let them sit in the pepper spray.
Eventually, maybe they'll come out.
So finally, at about 9, 10 o'clock at night, okay, we surrender. So we start taking these guys one by one, you know, out the front entrance of the chow hall. And these guys, they refuse to walk, you know, as part of their protest.
Oh, so you have to drag them out of there.
Right. They destroyed the chow hall, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage. And so we had to carry these guys. You know, we'd cuff them up, leg irons and belly chains, and we'd have to carry them to the rec field. And that's where we'd lay them down on the rec field face down. And this is, you know, it's by this time it's already getting cold outside. It's not summer yet, so it's still cold outside.
And when it gets cold at night, it gets cold.
Yeah, because you're in the high desert over in
Winslow. I've been there. I know.
You know, and you got inmates. Hey, CO, I got to use the bathroom. It's like, well, hey, you know what? Sorry about your luck.
Yep, you're gonna have to yourself or poop.
You're gonna have to just be right there and piss all over yourself. Well, I have to crap. Well, you know what? Crap your pants because you're not going to the restroom. You know what? You should have thought about that before you destroyed the chow hall.
And before you decided to be part of a riot,
exactly,
a protest or whatever you want to call it. But
So we get these guys out there, we get them all ID'd, get all their inmate numbers and their housing units. And while we're out watching the inmates, we have other officers that are in the cell block stripping their cells.
Yeah.
And inventorying all of their property. And then they go back into their cell with nothing but a sheet and a pair of boxer shorts.
Wow.
No TVs, no paperwork, no books, no food, nothing. Nothing. No tobacco products. They're just burnt.
You burned yourself. Yeah,
they did. And so, we put them on lockdown for like 2 weeks. They did not get to go to the commissary because they have an inmate store that they get to frequent once a week.
Yeah.
To buy tobacco and, you know, honey,
buns, whatever else. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever they need to use to trade and barter and extort inmates with.
It's such a messed up, corrupted system.
It is.
I don't know how they would ever expect anyone to come out of prison better than when they went in. It just doesn't happen.
It makes criminals better criminals.
Yeah, yeah.
It really does.
It's like a college for becoming a master criminal. Go to prison.
Yeah. It is. Absolutely. They would, so 2 weeks they had no commissary. And at this time, we could still smoke in the cell blocks.
Yeah.
You know, they hadn't banned smoking in state buildings or anywhere else. So we could smoke and I smoked at the time. So I would take, and down on the lower tier, you had three or four, steel tables that they could sit at and do, you know, play dominoes or cards or whatever. And I would go out and I would light a cigarette and I would put it, you know, stand it up on its butt.
Yeah.
A fresh cigarette. And I just put it out there and it would sit there and you would see these fishing lines made out of dental floss and paper clips come shooting out from the doors. All the doors had these fishing lines trying to get that one cigarette.
Oh, really? You know, it sounds like the desperation that we went through in the academy when we were trying to get a cigarette.
Yes, or a tub of ice cream from the cafeteria.
Yeah, something along those lines. I mean, you know, that was probably the closest equivalent. And it was nowhere near equivalent, but it was the closest equivalent to being in prison.
That's a fact. Yes, absolutely.
Denied things that you wanted, unable to get the things that you wanted, and had to deal with what you were given. I mean, that's basically to what we went through in the academy. We had a lot more fun because we broke the rules.
Right, right.
But along the same lines.
How are you going to have fun if you're not breaking the rules?
Well, yeah. But we weren't killing people or shiving people or anything along those lines.
No, raping and pillaging.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had a lot of that going on in prison, rape. You know, I would have inmates come up to me and, hey, CO, I need to get off the yard.
Yeah.
Well, how come? Well, I got raped. Well, come on up to the yard office and show us who it was that raped you. And we'll deal with them accordingly. And then we'll put you in protective segregation.
Until they come along and kill you. Yes.
Right. Well, he wouldn't want to do it. So I'm like, yeah. Okay, go back to your house and you're stuck on general population. Well, yeah. The next day he comes up to me and this guy really got raped.
Oh, my
God. We had to actually take him to the hospital. He was rectal bleeding and blah, blah, blah. Well, he finally decided to give up some names. And so those guys went to the hole.
Well, I understand that fear of giving up names because you're just setting yourself up to be shivved later. You know, it's
now,
like,
yeah, now you're labeled as a snitch.
Yeah.
You're in protective segregation and that stays with your prison record.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, dealing with child molesters that were in general population, they would first come to the general population, you know, and depending on what race he was, the leader of that race would go up to that inmate and say, you got 24 hours to produce your papers. What are you here for?
Yeah.
And he would make up some bullshit story. And they all knew who he was because they've seen his face on the news.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they knew what he was in for, but they give him a chance to step up. And if you don't produce your papers in 24 hours, you're either going to get beat down or killed.
Yeah.
For being a child molester. And, you know, most of the time that we would get them in protective segregation before it came to that because they would give up names.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, that's just something that sticks with you through your whole prison career.
That's kind of the weakened personality of child molesters. They're going to give up a name before they get hurt.
Oh, damn straight, because you know. They're cowards. And that's why they prey on children is because they're cowards.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, they want to feel that power of, you know, dominance, but
well,
at the same time,
it's a
self-preservation.
I don't understand. I mean, they'll come out and admit it, but I mean, the people who are in charge of such things, but I don't understand why they can't really understand the reasoning behind child molestation. It's a learned behavior. It's a continued behavior from something that was done to someone as a child, and they're doing the same thing, trying to regain that power that they lost as a
right.
child. And
roles are reversed at that point.
But there should be, knowing what causes it and what the stem of it is, there should be a way that they can figure out to put an end to it.
It's a mental illness, really, also.
I too. Get that, but it's also brought on by a behavior.
It is.
Someone just isn't born and suddenly becomes a child molester for no reason. They
right.
were 9 times out of 10 molested themselves as a correct. Child. So
right.
until we put a stop to it altogether, it is never going to go away because someone is always going to sneak through the cracks.
Absolutely.
So, but back to the prison stories, which at this point are a little more pleasant than what I was talking about.
So yeah, that was one instance. And during that riot, we had an inmate. I don't know if I should use his name.
No, don't use his name.
He was a Phoenix Cardinal football player.
Okay, that would be enough for anybody to probably figure out who he is.
At one time in his life, and you know, had all kinds of charity things going on, and things set up for, you know, youth, and had got busted for had gotten busted for transport and intent to sell cocaine, large quantities of cocaine.
Wow. Okay.
Now you already got all this money. Why would you even delve into
exactly?
That?
What's the point?
So this guy, I mean, he was huge. He was a big, big, big black man. And we called him the Eclipse.
Yeah.
Because he was so big. He, you know, he could just eclipse the sun.
He blocked the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's the one that actually basically incited the Chow Hall riot.
Oh, really?
Due to they were upset that they were getting their rec times shortened because of lack of staff. You know, we couldn't do rec because we didn't have officers to watch the rec field.
I understand their beef, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's no way to go about it.
No.
And so this guy.
But as a prisoner, you never have any say about your atmosphere. And
no, you don't.
And they should know that as a prisoner, you don't have any say, and they can pretty much do whatever they want to you and get away with it.
They got 24/7 to think about ways to mess with you, to compromise your position, to
if they could some way actually do the things that they are supposed to do for rehabilitation, if they could implement schooling and teaching these guys how to behave in society and how to come out of prison and be successful as a career type person or whatever you do.
An upstanding person of society.
Exactly. If they could make these guys understand what it means to contribute to your surroundings, what it means to be part of an actual law-abiding nation, then those are the guys who deserve to come out and receive a helping hand, you know, to be able to succeed in life. But they do none of these things. They set these guys up, you know, and I'm sure it's not intentional. It may be by the for-profit prisons, but they set these guys up to do nothing but come back to prison within a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a never-ending cycle. And
the amount of money that it costs, you know, the taxpayers to house inmates, not to mention illegal immigrant inmates.
Yes,
because their price tag is higher.
Why?
Because they say that you have to have interpreters for them. Well,
oh,
I in 10 years never saw an interpreter for any one of these, but taxpayers paid more money for illegal immigrants.
It's an excuse to charge the taxpayer more because most of these prisons are for-profit prisons and they ran on the tightest string budget they can do, and they eliminate everything that they can eliminate that they're supposed to be doing,
but they're still collecting the money.
It's something like, I think last time I heard it was like $65,000 a year to house one prisoner.
Yeah.
And
one inmate.
That's ridiculous. You're talking one thousands.
And look how many people that are incarcerated in the United States. How much money is that?
Yeah. And that's a lot of money. They're not contributing a dime. And even when they get out of prison, they're getting a meager job and they're not contributing much in tax money.
Well, not only that, but a lot of people don't want to hire convicted felons.
Exactly. But if they had it set up as a rehabilitative type situation where when you went to prison, you were either really rehabilitated or you were stuck in a hole and you were never coming out.
Exactly.
Together. And if they rehabilitated these guys and brought these guys out and said, hey, we've got this young man. He's been rehabilitated. He wants to do this for a career. We are going to subsidize his income for the first year if you hire him.
Right.
Still would be cheaper than sending him back to prison.
Absolutely. So back to the Eclipse. So this guy, you know, and I had a pretty good rapport with him up until this day.
Yeah.
You know, I never had an issue with him. He was always respectful. I was respectful to him. You know, not overly respectful, but you know, I respected him as a human being and as a man. And it's not, it wasn't my job to make his time harder.
Yeah.
You know, but this guy, after the whole Chow Hall riot, I get a lawsuit from him suing me for $100,000.
For what?
Because he said I endangered his life. I put his life in danger.
He endangered his own life by starting the riot.
Exactly. And so, you know, I went through, you know, and I was protected because I followed policy and procedure.
Yeah.
And the Department of Correction lawyers, they had my back, and you know, they looked at the videotapes and they did see that he had incited the riot.
Yeah.
And then I had done my job and had secured the situation. So yeah, that lawsuit didn't go anywhere. I've still got the paperwork, as a matter of fact.
Well, you know, he didn't, it wasn't personal. It was about trying to get a dollar out of it.
Trying to get a dollar. Yeah. Because I was a major football player and I have a shit ton of money, but I want more.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I'm selling cocaine.
Well, you know, I he obviously, while he was a football player, must have spent more than he had coming in.
He must have.
He probably was buying all his buddies coke and doing all this stuff. And then figured, well, I might as well become a dealer because that would make it easier.
But
he was on a downward spiral anyway.
Yes, he was. We had another instance where we had the cell block riot. It was cell block 4. And you had A side and B side. It was cell block A. And A, B, and C, D. So you had each cell block, like cell block A, would house 50 inmates. The other side would house 50 inmates. And then you'd have 50 inmates and 50 inmates, you know, to make up the H. Well, cell block A, B, go to work one day and they go to chow. They come back from chow and for night, you know, dinner chow, and they start busting out the windows on their cell doors. They started busting out the sinks and the toilets in their cells.
Why? And you're going to have to live with the destruction of that. So why would you do your own? It makes no sense.
Exactly. And so, we get the call to respond to this cell block, and I run in and there's water coming over the top tier, like waterfalls.
Yeah.
And there's probably about a foot of standing water on the lower tier.
Oh my God.
On the lower floor. And they're busting out windows and they're throwing shards of, you know, at some of the cell blocks had ceramic sinks. Some of them, had stainless steel.
Yeah.
The ceramic sinks, they were chunking, you know, throwing chunks of ceramic at us.
Yeah.
And so we're in there. We have black vests on. We have helmets on. Most of the correctional officers had gas masks because we're, you know, as soon as they bust out a window, we're dumping in pepper spray.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm running around the cell block, no gas mask, just a helmet and a vest. And my lieutenant tells me, Selby, you need to get a gas mask on. And I'm like, no. He goes, you're not going to be any good to us if you get, you know, all this pepper spray.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I was just inhaling it. My adrenaline was so high.
Yeah.
That I was not affected.
It wasn't phasing at that point.
It was not. And, you know, he's talking to me and I hear a window break out up on the upper run. I said, got to go. I hauled Bud up the stairs, ran over to that cell and just started fogging that cell with pepper spray. So there again, they get locked down for a couple of weeks. No commissary, no nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they're eating. We called them, they had sack lunches. We called them bag nasties.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bologna.
It's this and the syrupy peanut butter that they serve on those peanut butter sandwiches that they have.
Right.
It is like, it's like wall plaster. I've seen it. It's like glue. You could glue that sandwich. Yeah. And you can glue that sandwich with the peanut butter to a ceiling and it wouldn't fall off for a year until it until it completely dried out. I mean, that stuff is nasty. I don't know how anyone could stomach it. You don't want to be stuck with bag nasties.
no bag nasties. So we had that one. There's a lot of stories. You know, there were times when you had to do put an inmate in a dry cell.
Yeah.
And you had to do defecation watch.
Oh.
And they're in this, you know, 8x8 concrete
room. If you want to call it that.
20 feet high. Yeah, there's a skylight at the top. But they're in there with just their boxer shorts and a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah.
And
no toilet paper? No toilet paper?
No toilet paper. And we'd have them in this cell, and as soon as they would take a crap in the bucket, we're taking the bucket and we're going through it looking for balloons of heroin, cocaine, marijuana, whatever.
Oh, what a nasty job.
So one day, you know, I had done it, you know, when I was a rookie cop, and I got stuck as a field training officer with this new CO, and we had defecation watch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, dude, he crapped. You get to go through it. Well, why do I get to go through it? Well, because you're the fish.
You're the trainee. You got to learn how to do it.
You know, the inmates would call new officers fish because, you know, we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And so, that was kind of a crazy time doing a defecation watch.
Oh my goodness. I can't imagine.
It was insane.
With that being said, I think it's a good spot to take a break.
All right.
We'll be right back, people.
Welcome back,
everyone. We're back. I'm going to let Mr. Selby continue on with his prisoner type stories. And we've got a couple reviews to do, but we'll get her done. The floor is yours, Lynn.
All right. So back to disturbances, or, you know, what some folks call riots.
Yeah.
We had an instance on the rec field one day where the blacks and the whites wanted to do a peaceful protest.
Oh,
they were just going to do a sit down on the rec field and not comply. And because they were still fed up about their rec times, and the Hispanics didn't want to participate. So in turn, that turned into a brawl because the Hispanics didn't want to participate. So the blacks and the whites went after the Hispanics.
Oh, goodness.
And at that time, we had weight piles on the yard. You know, we had guys that were bigger than life.
Yeah.
You know, just lifting weights. And
well, when it's all you have to do for days, you can get pretty big.
You can. We had a guy in there that had this big white guy. He was an Aryan Brotherhood. Uh-huh. And on his back, he had tattoos that were probably, you know, 3 inches tall by, you know, 2 inches wide.
Yeah.
And it said the Aryan Barbarian.
Oh, my goodness.
Across the top of his shoulders. That's how big he was.
The
Aryan Barbarian. This guy was, he was a monster.
That would have to be to spell it that large across your shoulders and have it all fit. Oh, my goodness.
But he, you know, they were, you know, they had baseball bats, you know, because they play softball. They had horseshoes because they'd throw shoes, you know.
Yeah.
And I saw this guy, this black guy took a swing with a baseball bat to this Hispanic guy. to his head. And missed his head within like an inch.
Oh my God.
And so, you know, I'm responding to this disturbance, and there's this white boy, little skinny guy, and he starts trying to climb the fence. And I'm like, no, no, come back down here. I grabbed him by his belt and drug him.
Do you want to get shot?
Drug him off the rec field fence and cuffed him up. And yeah, it was just nuts. We got the tower officer up there. He's shooting off sting ball grenades, you know, into the crowd. It was insane. It was just, it was nuts.
And I mean, stuff like that can, it doesn't, but it can happen every single day in prison.
It can. Yep.
And, I know it goes through bouts. You might go through a bout of several months where nothing happens, but you also may go through a couple months where every day something is happening.
Right.
And I'm sure you've seen a lot of that. It just blows my mind that how once you get yourself in that situation as a prisoner, how you can't all just get together and think logically about what would make the most sense for us all to be able to get along in here and survive.
Right, right.
But no, they do the exact opposite.
They do.
They think that they still can do what they want to do and get what they want in prison.
By being idiots.
By being idiots, yes. It just blows my mind how, you know, I know that there has to be a certain percentage of people who are in prison who are just shaking their head thinking, what is this fucking point of acting this way? You don't achieve nothing. You never get anything you're asking for. You never make any change that's going to happen, or you know, you don't accomplish a damn thing other than maybe getting a few people killed.
Mm-hmm. And losing your privileges
for weeks, you know,
losing your TV. I mean, the TV is the best babysitter in prison.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
You know, and people, you know, a lot of people that don't understand prison, they're like, they have TVs. Why would you give them a TV?
Well, if you don't give them something to do,
you're
just asking for trouble.
Absolutely. Because then they just think of ways to mess with you.
They'll fight and mess with stuff just to have something to occupy their time.
Exactly.
You know, should they
all be
working and a job or doing something while they're in prison? Yes, I believe that they should. But, and they do to a degree.
Yeah, 10 but cents an hour.
Prisons should all be affiliated with either a farm or a manufacturing outfit or something that these guys can do to occupy their time and be productive.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because right now most prisons are not in any way contributing back to society.
No, it's not a correctional institution at all. They're not correcting anything. No,
they're not correcting anything. They're not. All it is housing a bunch of dead rats, really. That's
pretty much. Yeah.
You know, and
you're a glorified babysitter, really, you know, it's sad because you're babysitting grown ass men.
Yeah. Who should know better, but don't
exactly
seem to know anything. And
right.
It takes a lot. Sometimes takes a lot of intelligence to be a criminal.
Absolutely.
Some of the things that they get up to, or some of the things that they do, takes a gram of intelligence to be able to do. You know, you can't just be a dumbass and do those types of things. So it just blows my mind that they can't get it through their head that, hey, well, I made it to prison. Maybe I should take advantage of the situation and improve my chances when I get back out.
And some guys, you know, like young guys that would come in 18, 19 years old, they'd be proud of the fact that they were finally in prison because, you know what, their grandfather was, their father was, their uncles are, you know, their mom is, you know, so now they're in prison.
I would be so proud if I stayed out. I wouldn't be proud if I got in. That doesn't
I know. And, you know, the best job at the prison, Joey, was the being a chow hall officer.
Oh, yeah.
Working in the kitchen, you know, making sure they weren't stabbing each other or whatever. Because they would have chef knives and blah, blah, blah. And
here again is another example of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Every prison has a kitchen. Every prison needs food for that kitchen. There should all have some kind of masterful garden where those vegetables are being used in the prison. Yeah, and you're not forced to eat slop.
Oh, the food was terrible. And the same food they feed the inmates in prison is the same food they feed our children in their schools.
Exactly. And that's...
Where's the divide?
Yeah. It's horrible.
It is horrible. And, you know, in the kitchen, when you worked a kitchen officer, those inmates, you know, because if you had a good rapport with them and you showed the respect, you know,
yeah,
they would make you anything you wanted. I'd have double cheeseburgers. I'd have curried vegetables and rice.
Well, see, that's it too, though. There are some people who can take the worst food and make it decent.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
And if they were allowed to do things like that, then maybe they wouldn't have the riots and the fighting that they have.
Right. You know?
It does bring odd groups together where they band together to fight against the COs.
Right.
And
but they don't come together as one unit. They're still segregated by race.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know what? It's more than just, there's more to life than just your race.
Of any place or any situation where tolerance and respect should be taught to the most ultimate degree,
mm-hmm.
it would be prison. If you can get these guys, they don't necessarily have to like each other, but if you can get them to respect each other, even when it's a different race or a different group, you can get them to respect that, hey, that person, even though they may be different in their way of thinking or their nationality or whatever, they're still a person. They still think along the same lines as you do. They still have the same needs that you do.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can put that into society today too, you know.
Exactly. Yeah,
but people would just respect each other.
Why not start it at the place where the people are at their worst?
Right. Or start it before they get there.
Yeah. Well,
you got to start it before they get there.
Obviously. But what I'm saying, my point is if you can change those people's minds, then you can change anyone's mind.
That's a fact. Yeah. So, you know, people in society, you know. Yes, you know, I might have this view and you have a different, completely different view. And I don't have to like your view, but I still like you.
Yeah.
And I still respect you. Doesn't mean I have to like what you think. We can still think differently and still get along.
Exactly.
You know, and that's where, you know, we have so much divisiveness in this country today. And it's like if people would just open their eyes and realize that, you know, we're all here together.
Yeah.
Regardless of our race or our backgrounds.
A lot of this divisiveness is done intentionally to keep people separated. And people don't see it.
Yeah, exactly. It's bullshit.
Yeah. You okay?
I'm good. No. I just had to move.
I thought maybe something caught on fire there for a second.
Not yet.
You almost got yourself on fire. Yeah, but, you know, that's what I'm talking about. You know, it's not like you're going to change the world overnight. No one is.
No. But
if you don't start somewhere, it's only going to get worse.
Right.
You know, and
I mean, you still have to have a degree of compassion, regardless of you know, a prison setting. You still have to show a little bit of compassion there.
Yeah.
You know, I
would still have human beings regardless. Yeah.
Whose parents, you know, mom might have passed away, you know, or grandmother might have passed away, and you know, they're just distraught. And you know, you put on a lot of hats as a corrections officer. You're a brother, a father, a psychologist, a preacher, you know, you have to put on those hats.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to try and you have so many different personalities and characteristics of different people that you have to be able to chameleon to each person.
Yeah.
Which is, it's crazy.
Yeah, I just think the entire prison system is so screwed up. And if they don't start to do something about it and fix it, that we're all just setting ourselves up to be murdered. You know, if you don't rehabilitate people and then you eventually release all those people back into society, or some kind of end time cataclysm happens and all those people are released in multitudes, it's going to be like kind of what happened in what's the name of that show, The Walking Dead, the series.
You know, I got to experience a lot of things. I got to learn a lot of things, do things that I wouldn't have gotten to do in my life. You know, I got to be a tower officer. I went and I had to qualify on the AR-15 and, you know, go through this. I mean, it was a discretionary shoot, and I've got the sergeant screaming in my ear, you know, trying to cause a stress load. And at the same time, you have to think rationally while he's screaming at you, throwing grenades and smoke bombs and causing chaos.
Yeah.
And you still have to make the right decision to shoot or not to shoot.
Yeah.
And it's just insane.
Yeah.
You know, I got to be a tactical support unit officer. So, you know, I had to go through and you have to be sponsored by another officer that's in this tactical support unit to even get on the unit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I got to, you know, I got to fire weapons and, you know, things that most people will never get to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the biggest challenge with leaving corrections and going back into the civilian sector of, you know, employment, it's been hard because you get a tone, and, you know, regular people think that you're yelling at them when you're not. It's just, they're calling your tone aggressive, but you're not being aggressive, but it's how it sounds coming off.
Well, you're used to not sounding bubbly and inviting,
right?
Because the way prisoners would take that would be totally different than the way someone in the public may take it.
Right. You have to be authoritative.
Yeah.
And yeah, through 10 years, I mean, it's just a natural thing after time to be authoritative.
Yeah.
And people confuse that with, you know, I'm talking normal, but they think I'm yelling.
Yeah.
But I'm not yelling. If you want to hear me yell, you'll hear me yell. Yeah. You'll know when I'm yelling.
They think you're being aggressive, even though you're not.
Exactly.
It's right. Just a normal tone. I could see that it would take a while to get away from that.
I still have that issue, and it's been a long time since I've worked there.
Yeah.
And still have I struggle every day, and I have to think about how I talk to people and how it comes out, and
yeah,
and my tone. It's exhausting.
So even though you were not a prisoner, you suffered from the effects of being a CO for 10 years.
Correct.
And still do suffer.
Yes. So,
you know, with that in mind, what makes them think that anyone could come out of prison any better than when they went in?
Exactly. Exactly.
You're not even the guy that was behind bars for something criminal. And you're still suffering, basically, I should probably say, ill effects of being a CO.
Right.
I really have an issue with the entire prison system. Do I agree that people who do things against society don't belong in prison? Of course they belong in prison.
Yeah.
But if we are sending someone to prison for something that they could be rehabilitated for, and they're not receiving any form at all of rehabilitation, then we're wasting our time. We should just shoot them in the head.
You know, early on in my career, as a corrections officer, I wanted to start a Scared Straight program in Arizona.
Yeah.
And I took it all the way up to the director of corrections, and they would not allow it. And it's like, well, other states do it.
You know why they wouldn't allow it? Because there's too much stuff they would have to cover up to the public eye to allow anyone to come into their prison. And it sets themselves up to be scrutinized by outside eyes, and they didn't want that scrutinization, so they deny any of access.
But if you could touch, you know, one out of 10 kids,
yeah, I know it's not
two, three out of 10
at that point. It's not for the benefit of your existing prisoners, it's for the benefit of those kids to see what it's like and not ever want to come there.
Exactly. And to straighten up their lives before they do something to end up in prison. Yeah.
It really is not that difficult. If people would just realize as a young person that it is really not that difficult. In fact, it's easier to be a good person, to follow society's rules and laws. Yeah. Than it is to be a criminal.
Right. It takes more energy.
More energy and more effort to think along those lines and to be basically a bad person.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You know, it was a good time. I learned a lot. I got to do a lot of things. And, but now I pay for it.
Yeah. Well, at least you got out of it. You didn't make it a lifelong career. I think what you're doing now is probably a lot more pleasurable to you, and probably a lot less strenuous for one thing.
Yes.
And a lot less life-threatening, except for when you get behind the wheel with somebody as a test drive that doesn't know how to drive.
Good Lord, I've been scared to death before, Joey. I'm hitting the imaginary brake, you know, and nothing's happening.
No. Well, we didn't have time to get to our review on the Impossible Whopper today.
No. Have you tried one yet?
I have not. I was going to say, which is probably a good thing because I haven't had a chance to try one. I am planning on trying one this weekend though, so next week we will review that. I also wanted to talk about The Voice because it's back out there now.
Yes,
they're approaching, or they're into the knockout rounds, and I almost caught up this week. I'm up to the battle rounds. It's a good show this season. They've got two new coaches.
Good talent.
Chance the Rapper and Niall from One Direction are the new joins for the coaches. It's Blake Shelton's last year.
Oh.
He's retiring from coaching after this year. So it's a good season to watch. I think people will enjoy it. I've been binging the hell out of it for like the first 8 or 9 episodes, and it's been really good. I recommend it to people out there. If you like music or you like singing, you'll definitely like The Voice. It's always been one of my, and I'm not a huge fan of competition shows. You know, some of them are just downright stupid. But
right.
The Voice has always appealed to me, and they always seem to do a very good job. And I like Carson, you know, as the host. He does a good job. You know, him and Blake started their own show.
Oh, really?
It's called Bar Something. It's in his bar, and they play these bar games. They bring on different guests, and they play these different bar games and stuff. And it's just ridiculous. But Blake's hosting it, and Carson's hosting it. And really good show. I like it. But I think that's what he's – and it's done in his bar, you know, near his home or whatever. But – or maybe in Nashville. I don't know. But that's what he wants to do. He doesn't want to be stuck in Hollywood all the time doing The Voice. So I think that's why he finally retired. I mean, he's been there. This is his 23rd season of the show.
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, they do 2 seasons a year.
Okay.
They do one in the beginning of the year and one in like September.
Okay.
So he's on it twice a year. You know, it takes a lot of his time. And now that he's married to Gwen Stefani and wants to spend more time with her.
You think?
Yeah. And can you blame him? So, you know, that I think that's why he's decided to retire, just to be able to be home more.
Sure.
And I get it. He's
You can't blame a guy.
You can age out of that show too, because music, that type of thing, is more of a young
crowd. It's always changing.
Yeah, it's always changing. It's more of a young crowd type thing.
Yeah.
And you can only do something for so long, and then you feel the need to move on, just like you with being a CEO.
Yeah.
You did it for 10 years and that was enough. You know, it was time to move on.
It was.
But anyway, I think we're good for this week. Until next time, think big,
think loud.